John Davison joined Unilever in March 2021 to carve out the company's underperforming tea portfolio. Davison was formerly CEO at Zuellig Pharma, a $13 billion pharmaceutical distribution company employing 13,000 workers in 12 Asian countries. Davison, who is British, is a graduate of Cambridge University and Harvard Business School. He began his career with UK retailer Marks & Spencer before joining McKinsey & Company in 1991. He was global head of strategy at Diageo in 1995 during the Guinness merger, and a regional president at Danone for 11 years beginning in 2003. Davison, who lives in Singapore, will relocate to England after Christmas. When a private equity firm puts $5 billion to work, there are clear expectations they will see sizable returns. In general, two patterns have emerged. One in which the management team cuts their way to profitability, trimming staff, investing in automation, and introducing efficiencies. The second is spurring growth.
You know, why would a company like CVC want, as you say, to invest $5 billion in taking Ekaterra out of Unilever? It boils down to three or four key points. Number one, it's a growth category. Tea, it's on trend. I think COVID, if anything, has reinforced the dynamics in tea as a healthy beverage. And it has a lot of medicinal qualities, as you will know, in terms of heart health, digestion, you name it. Investors like to be in categories that are on trend and have long-term potential. Secondly, if you look at Ekaterra, we are the largest by some stretch. I think three times larger than the next player. So we have a leadership position, and that leadership position on Lipton alone stretches across, you know, tens and tens of markets, I think 30, 40 different markets. It's not been something we've built on and really capitalized on, I would say. But I think capital partners, CVC, have seen that opportunity to capitalize and drive that leadership position to greater heights. And with that, bring the category into faster growth. So I think that's the second big reason, is the strength of our competitive position relative to the rest of the peer group in the industry. And I think the third thing is the management team. I'm the rookie and the team just joined 6 months ago, but the team we've put together in Ekaterra is highly experienced. Our R&D team, I think, is really strong. We have, I think, 35, 40 tea tasters. And when you put all that organization together on top of a great brand portfolio in a growing category, it's clear to see why CVC or anyone else would be interested in investing in the business. Now, that said, we've now got to deliver on all the promise, to your point. And that will be something top of mind as we start to engage with our future owners. And of course, these transactions take time to go through the process. There's a few months now of antitrust filings, regulatory processes and approvals to go. So I think we won't see the close of this deal probably until mid-next year.
Consumers, when asked, say they are willing to pay more for products that are sustainable and to reward manufacturers who close the loop and growers who conserve water and regenerate soil. So on one hand, we have a price premium of perhaps 20 to 30% at retail. The premium is similar to that paid for organic goods and by consumers who have demonstrated their willingness to pay more for fair trade goods. On the other hand, tea manufacturers face significant additional costs to cultivate and process premium tea. There is the expense of adapting to a changing climate, costs to comply with requirements set by third-party certifiers, new equipment and more expensive plant-based tea bags and earth-friendly packaging, and set-asides to pay for carbon credits. Is the premium consumers are willing to pay sufficient to cover the cost of sustainable production? The desire is there, and there's money on the table. Can you operate Ekaterra Tea in a way that's both sustainable and profitable?
That's a great question. And I think sustainability and ESG philosophies and beliefs are at different stages of development and relevance in different parts of the world. In COP26, you could absolutely feel that the world's eyes were on everything that was happening, but it's a difficult balance to strike. You know, I would like to believe consumers would sit there and say, yeah, we understand all the packaging, we understand all the accreditations, we get it. Here's an extra 20, 30%, no problem. But I don't believe that's going to happen overnight. And I don't believe that will happen across the world. I think it may happen in certain societies, but it's not going to be a wholesale phenomenon at this stage, maybe hopefully in the next years to come, which means that, you know, we do, to your point, have to develop sound business cases to surround the decisions we take to drive a more sustainable approach to our business process. And this is why technology and R&D is so important, because, you know, if you remove plastic from your packaging, you know, as I said at COP26, you know, you do put in an investment to your machines and the X number of factories that need to do that to make that happen. And if you have the technology and the R&D to design, you know, a fully recyclable or biodegradable pack instead, and that can be made at a unit cost lower, then that's a win-win. But there will be moments where we have to make those tough decisions and say, here's an extra capex that's needed to fit this factory to be able to do X, Y, and Z in a completely different way. And I think we've got to be courageous enough to have those decisions and make those decisions and figure out how to make them pay back with or without the 20, 30% extra help from the consumer. Of course, right now, and you'll hear this from anyone you interview in consumer products or any product category, there's an enormous escalation in input costs, not only from commodity and crops, but also from logistics, supply chain, from carton packaging all over the world, generally ripple effects or big tide wave effects coming out of COVID and the disruption caused to the planet by that. And we're digesting those changes as well as thinking ahead to how we, you know, motor on climate change. So it's we like to call it a VUCA world, a lot of volatility, a lot of uncertainty. Because we've generally operated in so many different economies with those kinds of unusually volatile trends historically, I think we've got a team that's pretty creative, pretty versatile, and is well equipped to deal with these kinds of challenges that are often contradicting each other. And I think that's something that is, you know, that's why we are employed to do what we do. You know, if it was that straightforward, it wouldn't be challenging, it wouldn't be fun, it wouldn't be the adventure it is to be in this business.
So let's talk about the core product. In this case, making tea that people are willing to pay a premium price to drink. I don't think that any brand wants to be known for making tea so heavily discounted that it is perceived as cheap, or blends that taste worse than in years past. Ekaterra Tea inherits several brands on the rise, market leaders in 58 regions, but in the West, sales are stagnant. Last year, Unilever CEO Alan Jope set the dominoes in motion by declaring, quote, "Insanity is carrying on doing the same thing and looking for different outcomes. And for 10 years, we have been trying to ignite growth into our tea business unsuccessfully," end quote. Black tea drinkers were blamed for getting older and starting to fall over. "And that is the fundamental problem," said Jope. Quote, "Younger consumers are looking for novel experiences. And the consumer of Builder's Tea was someone who was born out of habit and was not into experimentation and trying new products," end quote. I know from personal experience, tea quality is an issue. Do you agree? And what are you going to do to make better tea?
Tea category within Unilever has probably been subject to somewhat of a focus on bringing down costs to manage exactly what you described, declining pricing or stagnant pricing in the market. So, you know, any multinational would probably want to deal with that kind of spiral of decline on value by de-engineering the product. I think certain things we are absolutely going to put right very quickly. Other things may take longer to fix. And we're going to work very hard at making sure we get our blends back to the top of the tree in terms of quality and in terms of value to the consumer. We can't live in an industry, if we are the leader in that industry, with second-rate teas or teas that are not absolutely the best they can possibly be. So I think we've got a job still to do. We've partially started that program in the last 12 to 18 months before I showed up. Now that I'm there with the team, it's something that we're now accelerating. That will entail clear investments in certain key areas, but also in the way we communicate benefits to consumers as well. Because I don't think we've done a very good job on that either historically. I think we've tended to pull back on consumer communications. And we've not played the powerful cards we have in our portfolio.